ghost galleries, pop-up art shows, and phantom projects. They all refer to a temporary art happening that is here today and gone tomorrow. Stay tuned. Good afternoon. This is Stephen DeLuque, and you have tuned in to Ears on Art, a show produced twice a month right here at the studios of KCBX Public Radio, serving the California Central Coast from Salinas to Ventura. Co-host Krissa Hewitt and I had the opportunity to speak with Michael Riddell, the organizer and one of the movers and shakers responsible for bringing the Phantom Project to San Luis Obispo County. In a nutshell, the Phantom Project is the creation of a temporary art gallery that suddenly appears in a commercial space and just as suddenly disappears after a prescribed time. But let's let Michael fill you in on all the details.
Stephen and I are here visiting today with Michael Riddell. And welcome.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, I'm here too.
The topic today is Phantom Gallery. Now I guess we get to say Phantom Galleries because you're about to have show number two. Michael, why don't you fill us in on what this is all about?
Well, the Phantom Project is pop-up galleries. Pop-up galleries have been around for quite a while. Not so much in this area, although there have been some experiments with it. The idea we started out with really came from seeing a few certain buildings downtown that just looked like galleries. I mean, there's one right next to Aaron Brothers that we love. For 2 years, I walked by this place on a regular basis and thought, that looks like a gallery to me. Why can't we put something in there? And so over time, this idea of approaching property managers and property owners about showing an art show in their space evolved. Later, I found out that pop-up galleries are common. And in a nutshell, that's what it is. It's a gallery that is set up in vacant retail space, and then once the show is done, it goes back to being what it was before. So the gallery completely disappears. It has no footprint except when there's a show going on.
You've had one of these shows. And Stephen was a part of that as a juror, so why don't we kind of talk about how that went, what worked, and if anything maybe didn't work as well? What'd you learn from that?
Well, for starters, we didn't know if we could even make it work at all. One of the difficulties with a pop-up gallery is that you don't know if the space is going to be available by the time you get ready for the show. So you have to prepare for your show very quickly. We had 5 weeks from the day we got buy-in from Matt Qualino at Qualino Properties, 5 weeks until the date we started the show. When we first talked to him, there were 5 people that knew about this idea in the world. And so within 5 weeks, we had to go from zero public awareness to enough to get a show put together, actually 4 weeks, because we had to get the art in a week before the show. So we had 4 weeks to get all the artists on board to bring their work in to be juried in or out of the show. Then another week before it opened. But that's kind of crazy fast for a gallery show.
Many shows that take place in galleries, certainly ones that take place in large museums, take anywhere from a year to 2 years to really prepare, and certainly months as opposed to weeks if that's all you have. Yes, a month is, boy, out of the cannon. And
Well, that's exactly right, and that's how it felt. And like I said, we didn't know if we could make it work. We didn't know if anybody would show up at all. So we made the requirements for the art very broad. Basically, it has to be art, and you have to have made it and bring it in on this certain day. This was part of the really craziness of it. The artists brought their work in from 8:30 in the morning to, I think it was 11. Mm-hmm. And everyone had to get their art in the door and lined up around the walls by 11 o'clock. Then we shooed everybody out. The jurors were Stephen and Tim Anderson and Glenn Starkey. So the jurors came in at that point and spent about an hour and a half picking their choices. We made it very simple for them. We gave them a pad of little sticky dots and said, put a sticky dot on everything you want. And if it doesn't have a sticky dot, we'll take it out. So they finished up right on time, and then we brought the artists back in and told them, if there's a sticky dot, you get to leave it, and if not, you need to take it home.
Stephen, what was the sticky dot process like?
Actually, went remarkably smoothly. We each took our own little pad of dots, and we went around and put dots on the ones that we specifically personally liked. We all got together after we'd all gone through the room, and we discussed whether or not we would have veto powers over other people's selections and things like that. And it turned out that there really wasn't any disagreement between the three of us. And we also went through and added some after we'd already done the previous selection. So it actually went very smoothly.
Okay, so you're walking around the room. Did you all have the same color dots?
Well, they were multicolors, but if I saw something that I was going to put a dot on and it already had a dot, I just walked by it.
Okay.
Because it was already been pre-selected, and so that's fine, you know.
Well, sometimes when there are multiple jurors, there's a yes, no, maybe kind of context. And so if two people say yes to something, then it's usually in. In this case, you weren't consciously or visibly doubling and tripling up.
No,
if the dot was there, then you just moved
right
on to something else.
There were a couple, I think three pieces that we had discussions about after everything had been pre-selected. Like one particular artist, we put all three of the works that artists brought in into the show. And we thought, well, you know, that's a little heavy. We can leave two in, but they don't need three. And it'll give us an ability to allow another artist into the show.
That actually touches on something. I haven't given you the stats yet. We had 237 artworks brought in the door. We had room for quite a bit less than that. They selected 61 pieces of the 237, and the gallery was full. So it was a challenge because there was so much good work that came in. A lot of good, very good pieces went back out the door that day. We just didn't have the room. Mm-hmm. We had 2,200 square feet.
It's easy, I think, to put the onus out there that there really aren't any real rules, criteria for how one makes those assessments as to what stays in the show, what doesn't stay in the show. As a juror, what types of things are going through your head as you're making those decisions?
A lot of different things. Number one is proficiency of material. Composition. I think pretty much everybody could recognize a well-proportioned, put-together piece of artwork. I mean, they stand out. The only things that really were easy not to put into the show were those that didn't. That the full thought process into the composition and the assembly and the use of materials simply wasn't there. And those were the easy ones to eliminate right away.
The first time that I was involved with the jurying process, I was not one of the jurors. I was the one coordinating the exhibit. And it was very interesting watching these two people go through all of this work. It happened to be a metalsmithing show. The two men who had a lot of experience in the field started looking at the different work. And then partway through, one of them said, "Didn't we see something kind of like this earlier?" They stopped and they rearranged their whole approach, which then was, let's look at some of the things that do happen to be, quote, like items and see which are the strongest mm-hmm. of those. And I also know that sometimes, especially with group shows, there are some jurors who really also say, how much space are we really talking about here? If they're not, sometimes they're jurying it on site, which happened here. Many times nowadays they're not. And hearing some other jurors talk about that, saying, I didn't accept this piece because it just was not going to work with everything else that was in the show. And that's an interesting thing, which is not just about this is not a good piece. It's just sometimes things don't coalesce.
It was one of the things that we were very conscious about when we were making the selections, was also trying to get as many different types of media into the show as well. We wanted to make sure there was a lot of 3D. And in the 2D, we wanted to make sure that, you know, photography was represented in all the various aspects of the different media. That came into the part of the selection process as well.
This is a very wide open process. Mm-hmm. And so it puts a lot of burden on the juror, especially with a limited space. I think usually jurors do have kind of a curatorial eye toward the total picture of the show rather than just, I like this one, I like that one. I think in general, jurors are also looking at how it fits together.
Again, I'm going to go back to the use of that word like, because I think it's very easy to say, this is my style preference, and needing as a juror to go beyond that premise.
Well, to me, it's just a successful piece of artwork. It's whether or not it's my personal taste, or as you said, I may not purchase it and put it into my house, but that doesn't mean that it's not a nice piece of artwork. You kind of have to divorce yourself during the jurying process as to your own prejudices. I'm an acrylic painter. That doesn't mean I want to pick every single acrylic painting that came in. So we really did try to focus on getting as many different varied styles and media into the show.
And Michael, when it was all up and ready, were you?
We were very happy. The Phantom team, there were about six of us, and three of us actually put the show together. And we found that we could kind of group things in some sort of a coherent way. Mm-hmm. We were very happy with the way the show came together. And we were standing room only at both of our show receptions. We had about 1,400 people walk in the door between the two receptions.
If you have just tuned in, you are listening to Ears on Art on KCBX Public Radio in San Luis Obispo, California. Today's guest is Michael Riddell, the organizer behind the Phantom Projects, temporary pop-up art galleries that suddenly appear in commercial spaces, the next being at the former A&R Furniture location on the park in Paso Robles.
Before we start talking about show number two, let's hear a little bit about you and your work.
Well, I'm a sculptor. I do mostly metal casting. Recently, I've been playing around with some epoxy resin clay. I also am a steel fabricator from way back. I spent 10 years in the welding trade fabricating steel. So right now I'm playing around with some ideas that will integrate some cast work and some fabricated work and some of this other work. I tend to work figuratively.
The metal?
Historically, I've done mostly bronze, but recently, and this is really partly about the economy we're in, I have been exploring pewter. I've developed my own system for casting pewter directly in rubber molds. They're high-heat rubbers that can take the melting temperature of pewter,
which is
425
as Fahrenheit. Compared to bronze, which is 1900,
yeah,
about
around there. Yes, so you get it a little above that melting point, so it flows through the mold and they come out really well.
And the size of
pewter pieces are very small. I've been working in these very miniature scale. In fact, what I've been doing recently is playing around with relationships and gender issues. And so this particular piece involved something like 11 or 12 female figures on one pedestal and 7 or 8 male figures on the other pedestal. And they were engaged in this banter back and forth, which you get to interpret. You kind of get to fill in the story, but I've set the stage for you.
I have seen this piece, and I found it truly engaging. It was, as you say, they are talking with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Intriguing. It was fun. And my sense is that you can arrange it differently.
Yes. In fact, there are about 22 different poses between the two genders that I've worked into half a dozen different pieces. I guess my basic philosophy, because I do work largely in figurative motifs, I like to set up a kind of a narrative, but leave most of it untold. What I find is that people come up with all kinds of interpretations that I never thought of, and a lot of them are really remarkable. One of the ideas I've had is to have a box set. They come nicely packaged, and you get to take them out, play with them, and set up your own stories. Another thing I've thought about doing is a chess set based on this concept. Mm-hmm. And so you could actually have a gender-based chessboard. So you have the males and the females rather than the blacks and the whites. Anyway, I haven't really gone far with that one yet.
So mm-hmm. Now you're about to open up the call for entries for show number 2, which is happening when and where?
Well, we actually launched the call for entries. It's on this SLOMA webpage. It will be at the A&R Furniture Store in Paso Robles, which is right on the corner of the park. It's about half a block from Studios on the Park. It's almost 10,000 square feet.
It's huge.
I was up there the other night peeking in the windows. 10,000 square feet compared to less than
about
that you
2200,
had?
2,200, including the bathrooms.
Okay, so now you got lots of room. So
yes.
Now what?
Well, this gives us a chance to do something we probably won't get to do very often. We are doing a show it's really three shows in one. We're having two jurors. One is Chris Winfield from Winfield Gallery up in Carmel. And the other one is Sylvia White from the Sylvia White Gallery in Ventura. They're both top-notch. They really know what they're doing, and they have a very good eye for art. What we're going to do is have each one of them jury all the work independent of each other. So you guys had a team
right.
effort. Each one of them will have to choose their own show by themselves. We're expecting that we'll get at least as many entries as we did last time. We're getting lots of buzz about this one. We're going to put two shows up, one juried in by each of the two jurors.
And but you're saying independently. Will they actually physically be doing it at separate times?
It really depends on their schedules. We've told them we'd like it either Monday or Tuesday of the week after we bring in the work, which will be the 28th and the 29th of April. The morning of the 28th, we will 9 to noon, we'll have an intake period. And then on Sunday, the next day, the 29th, we will have an intake period from 1 to 4. So a little morning, a little afternoon. It's twice as much time as we had last time. And hopefully it won't be too much busier. So we're going to do it in 2 days. We're going to show all the work that is accepted into the show. And if it is properly mounted for show, it's going to be included. And the idea is that we can do a little exercise or demonstration of what jurying is all about. So what we'll do is we'll have however many pieces show up. They'll all get hung in the gallery, but after the jury. So we'll, and this will be a challenge because we have two jurors who don't know what the other one's chosen, so they're going to overlap. They may overlap heavily. They may just barely overlap. We'll put their work up and clearly identify it as being in show A or show B or both. And then around that in the gallery, we'll put the rest of the work. And we'll have a People's Choice ballot. We will actually offer awards separately for each juror and for the People's Choice. So we're actually going to have 9 awards. If we have a big enough group, they might be pretty substantial.
What is the entry fee?
$25 for 2 pieces, or if you want to submit 3, then it becomes $35. So we're going to have this kind of demonstration of what it means for a show to be juried. And what I think that means is that each juror has their own opinions, their educated opinions, and their valuable opinions. And the public has their opinions. And one of the things you hear in every juried show as people walk through is, Why did they pick that? Well, you get to pick your own. If you go through the show and study what got selected by each juror and what didn't, then I think you can kind of begin to get a sense of what jurying's all about, because it's not just an arbitrary, absolute determination of this is good and this is not. And quite often people tend to think that that's what it means. People, especially artists, tend to think, well, if I wasn't accepted into the show, it means they didn't think my work was good enough. And as we've already discussed, that's not necessarily the only factor.
There's no doubt about it. It's always more fun to get accepted. But it is a real world out there, and so, yeah, you know, we have to kind of live with those ups and downs.
Well, Glenn Starkey wrote an article after the second week of the show. Actually, in both of his articles, he talked quite a bit about the challenges of jurying. When you've got a lot of good work coming in the door and you've got a limited space, it puts the jurors in a tough spot. I had just written an article. I do a little newsletter thing that I send out each week, and I had just written an article for that about the jury process. And in that article, I said that if you are offended or upset because you didn't get into a juried show, it probably means you aren't entering enough juried shows, because you get over that eventually. I mean, it still doesn't feel good when you're not accepted into a show, but you eventually have to develop some thick skin about it, because it's not just about the quality of your work. It's about a lot of things, including the disposition of the juror on that day. And it might even be about, he saw yours right after he saw another piece. Well, if they had been in the opposite position, he might have picked yours instead of the other one. I mean, it's very subjective, not just to the opinion of the juror, but to all kinds of factors that the juror is dealing with.
It definitely is a process, and yet, even though there's a level of subjectivity, I think in general, we can probably say that the worst that gets submitted usually is not accepted. And so sometimes it is that my work just wasn't good enough. It just didn't have any vision to it. It was poorly executed, whatever the situation might be, and it just didn't merit acknowledgement.
Well, in some cases, that is what it is. And I think it's a danger to make that assumption, because, as we've already talked about, there are a lot of other reasons, too. And yes, that is one reason. It's the one reason we all focus on.
It was funny because when Tim, Glenn, and I were doing the jurying, we all agreed that we would not discuss why we selected a piece or why we did not select a piece. We just weren't going to talk about it if anybody were to ask.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, we wanted to live through the process.
That was kind of the focus of Glenn's first, really, of both of his articles. I just realized I didn't tie back to why I told that story about the newsletter article. He actually quoted what I had written in that article in his second article. And it was all about the fact that jurying is a tough business, and submitting to juried shows is a tough business. There's just too much involved to second guess yourself and your work or what the juror was all about.
The other issue, and we've been talking about amount of space and therefore the amount of work, I think it's important to elaborate on the fact that one could say, well, just make it a little more crowded in the show. What happens when you do that?
I actually felt like the show we did the first time was a little crowded. I would have liked to have seen maybe 25% more space on the walls between the pieces. But it was okay. We made it work, and it wasn't too crazy crowded. But and I think the jurors did a great job of narrowing it down to something that we could manage. If they had given us two more big paintings, we would have been in trouble.
But what happens for the viewer?
Yes.
If it's too crowded?
I personally think it's a problem, because if a piece of work is good enough and interesting enough to be in a show, I think it needs space to shine. Mm-hmm. And when you stack them three high and 8 inches apart, nobody's got that opportunity to shine.
I have to say, I totally agree with that one.
Absolutely.
Stephen's nodding his head.
Well, and I just hope that we're not overestimating our 10,000 square feet. if this show is popular enough with the artists, we might be kind of crowded because we promised to put it all in. So we'll see.
Yeah.
That's one thing about these shows. You never know what's going to happen until it happens. You don't get early advanced entries. You wait until one day, and then suddenly everybody shows up, and you hope it's a lot of people.
Michael, this has just been really intriguing, and certainly wish you all the good fortune to reign again on round two. It certainly sounds as though the potential is absolutely there, and with that many people coming for round one, I can't think that most of them won't want to try again, plus maybe quite a few others. So
I just have to say that the team that you organized for the first one was amazing. I think that the amount of work you got done in that 4 or 5 day period before the show opened, after the selections were made, was astounding. It was a privilege to be part of it.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Well, we will be there, and thank you again.
Thank you.
Co-host Krissa Hewitt and I would like to thank today's guest, Michael Riddell, one of the founders of the Phantom Project, a pop-up art gallery concept that is hosting its second location, this time at the former A&R Furniture Store located on the park in Paso Robles. The take-in dates for artworks are Saturday, April 28th from 9 a.m. until noon, and on Sunday, April 29th from 1 until 4 p.m. The show, titled The View From Here, runs from the opening reception from 6 to 9 p.m. on Saturday, May 5th, until the closing reception, also from 6 to 9 p.m. on Saturday, June 2nd. The show hours are Fridays and Saturdays from noon until 9 p.m., and on Sundays from noon until 6 p.m. during the run of the show. For more information on entering, please visit the San Luis Obispo Museum of Art's website, SLOMA.org, and click on the exhibits icon. There is another way to find out more about the Phantom Projects, but, well, let's let Michael Riddell tell you all about that.
We have a pretty big presence on Facebook, and we just had Facebook awash with people talking about this for the full 5 weeks before the show and through the duration of the show and a little after. This time, we have a ready-made audience on Facebook.
And whose Facebook is this?
The members of the team created a page called The Phantom Project on Facebook. So if you were in Facebook and you searched for Phantom Project, you would find it.
So there you have it. You have been listening to Ears on Art, a twice-monthly program produced here at the studios of KCBX Public Radio, serving Southern Monterey, San Luis Obispo, and Santa Barbara counties. For co-host Krissa Hewitt, this is Stephen DeLuque. We would once again like to thank our guest speaker today, Michael Riddell. And a great big thank you to all of you who pledged to KCBX. We thoroughly appreciate your support.